Hey guys, welcome back to, I guess, hopefully this will be round two of Kush Books. Today, already lost my train of thought. That's how we're going at this, this moment. So, today I wanted to talk to you guys about Lightbringer. I know that in my last podcast, I almost said video, I talked a little bit about, you know, what was upcoming and stuff like that, but today I actually, on the day that I'm recording this podcast, I posted a picture on Instagram and Facebook of the word count for Lightbringer, and I had just hit 80,000 words on it, so hooray on that. Progress is being made slowly but surely. More slowly than surely at this point. Aside from that, so I posted these pictures and it was just like a little corner of my laptop and, showing that I hit 80K and I got like 40 likes on the photo on Instagram, which I know to a lot of people that's like, you know, nothing, but to me that's kind of a lot on my account, especially for a picture of like a word count that most people don't even know what the project is. And then I actually got some people commenting on the Facebook one, because I did a hashtag. You know, I usually do a hashtag. Obviously, I hashtag the crap out of my posts. It's how you get likes. That's the secret right there. If you're not getting good likes, you need to add more hashtags, honestly. But, you know, I did hashtag, like, Lila and Raphael, Izzy and Michael, and Aubrey and Gabriel, and then I did ... And so I kind of wanted to get this podcast done and basically tell you guys a little bit about Lightbringer. Basically because I've kind of turned the usual formula for these Fallen Chronicles books over on its ear for this one. And so this way, you know, hopefully if you guys are listening to these podcasts, you'll kind of understand the teasers, why, you know, the story seems like it's a lot different from Guardian, Protector, Messenger, because it is. And not just because there's two words in the title instead of one. So the main characters of this book are named Jordan and Ariel. And if you know anything about angel lore or anything like that, you can tell right away exactly what the big shift in these books is. And essentially in... I believe it's in Hebrew and the ending in EL, that basically means of God. So most angels, and it was a decision that I chose to not go with in my books, was that any angels, their names actually end in EL because they are, you know, Michael is strength of God. That's what that name means. So most of angels are, you know, like Gabriel's messenger of God. So they're always, you know, something of God. And Ariel, or Uriel, depending on which translation you want to go to, is light of God, which brings us the whole Lightbringer. You know, Raphael has to do with being a guardian, Gabriel messenger, and Michael protector. Obviously, that's where I chose the entire theme of these books that I wrote. And the last one has always been the Uriel, Ariel, and I decided to go with Ariel. And so you can kind of see the angel in this book is a girl. So that right there is the first big switch that we have. Ooh, text message. Sorry, guys. Sorry, just making sure no one died. Turn the sound off on that. No one has died. Good news. So this one already starts, you know, in the past three books, we've basically had this strong male angel that came in and, you know, some female that, somehow was in distress. Lila and Aubrey, I would say, you know, they're still pretty strong characters. They're going ahead in their life. Izzy's the one that was kind of, you know, almost crippled, for lack of a better word. And so, you know, they needed rescued from some kind of situation. And, you know, I hope that it's cleared my themes that, you know, Lila needed a guardian. Izzy needed a protector. Aubrey needed the message of faith. So what they needed was different. And so in this one, it starts off right off the bat very different because the main character whose narrative we hear is Jordan. So it's told from a boy's perspective. Jordan is the main character who we're hearing from in this story. So, you know, he needs to hear, like, he needs the light of God in his life. That's supposed to be kind of part of the big theme of this book. So yes, right away it's different. You know, I'm really enjoying this alternative thing where, you know, switching the male and female perspectives. You know, it's a strong female angel, but Jordan as a man, and, you know, maybe it's sexist, but he doesn't need rescued quite the same way that a girl does. I hope that, you know, especially Aubrey, there's still strong female characters aside from Izzy, but that was just part of her development. But, you know, the dynamic is still very different. And so this whole book starts off with a huge bang, and I don't want to spoil that part of it for you, but just trust me, this last book is very different from the other three in obviously what I hope is a really good way. But Jordan is definitely kind of like Aubrey, an unwilling participant in the life of the Fallen, and, you know, they're gearing up for this big fight. St. James is, you know, gathering this army, and they're going to have to fight him at some point, and they need Jordan to help them due to circumstances that will, you know, become clear as you read the book. But he doesn't want to be pulled away from this, not necessarily because his beliefs, you'll actually find out in the books that he went to St. Rose of Lima, the same school that Lila did, and they actually knew each other. They went to high school together for just 1 year. He was a senior when she was a freshman, so that's why he's not mentioned in Guardian or anything. So, you know, he's an older character. Unlike Lila and Izzy, he's more like Aubrey. He's out and independent. He already has a girlfriend named Leah, so that adds another interesting dynamic to the story. But the main reason that he doesn't want to get involved with the Fallen and help them out is because he has a sister named Peyton, and she actually has cancer, and she is, you know, struggling with this cancer battle and not in good health. And so that's something that, you know, he wants to be there for his sister. They're very close. I actually put them in the same situation that my older brother Kelly and I have. Whereas Kelly and I are 6 months apart in age, because he's adopted. And my parents were basically told, you know, long story short, that their odds of having children weren't that good. So they adopted my sister Kelsey, who's about 3 years older than me, and then they were waiting for Kelly to be born and had already, you know, done the paperwork to adopt him and stuff, and were actively waiting, like, for him to be born, and my mom found out she was pregnant with me. So we're only 6 months apart, and, you know, growing up, we were like twins, even though obviously, if you've seen the Things We Can't Change covers, Kelly's biracial, and I'm white, and so we obviously don't look anything alike, so it's pretty odd when we go out, you know, in public and tell people we're the same age and that we're siblings, and kind of, you know, people just look at us like, what? So, it's basically supposed to be the same situation for Jordan and Peyton, whereas Jordan is adopted and Peyton is not, and so they have this really close bond, like, you know, of twins, essentially, because they grew up together and, you know, were the same age and went through everything together, and now, you know, Peyton is dying, basically, and Jordan has to come to terms with that, all while trying to deal with the Fallen needing him and feeling like if he were to choose them, then he's abandoning Peyton, not to mention his girlfriend and his whole old way of life that he was completely satisfied with. So I think that's a big difference that you're going to see in this book, is that, you know, Lila and Izzy definitely hungered for something more and different, and Aubrey was kind of already involved due to her visions and stuff like that, whether she wanted to be or not. You know, she had a foot in this world and kind of knew there was something else out there, and, you know, she didn't want to choose faith, though she would have been satisfied to going off with the Fallen and kind of living their adventurous life without that God aspect, whereas Jordan just, you know, he just wants to stay as your average Joe. He doesn't want to, you know, live this big epic life. He wants to stay with his girlfriend and be there for his sister and for his sister not to die. So there's this huge dynamic there with that, you know, him and Peyton, him and his girlfriend Leah, and then obviously Ariel, because, you know, we want that romance, so I can't tell you what's gonna happen there. I don't want to spoil anything for you. You'll have to see how it all works out and stuff like that, but actually talking about it here has made me a lot more excited for the book. And like I said, slowly but steadily, that's coming at you guys. So I know a lot of you are already excited for that, and, you know, I love hearing those responses and seeing that you guys are excited for that. So, I thought I'd also talk a little bit about how the Fallen Chronicles series kind of came into being. And, oh my goodness, like, trying to think back. I came up with this idea for this series so long ago. Let's see. I'm 25 right now, and I think I wrote the first bits of Guardian, like, while I was still a senior in high school. So 8 years ago, about, I think, is when I first, you know, was thinking about it. And the reason that I started writing it, and I've said this several times, is just that I wanted to write a book. I used to be homeschooled, you know, and I was raised Catholic. Obviously, from these books, you can tell that, probably, and that I have, you know, more of a conservative mindset. So I was raised Catholic, and when I was growing up and asking to read books and stuff, and, like, you know, Harry Potter came out, and there was that boom with the fantasy and the wizarding world and stuff like that, and just, you know, things like that. And I asked my mom to read books because we would go to the library every week. On Friday, we would go to Mass at 8 o'clock, and then we would go and spend several hours at the downtown library in Columbus. That was just what we did, just like Lila and, you know, her siblings did on their Saturdays. So when Harry Potter came out, I actually remember I saw that movie. I went to the movies and saw the first one for a friend's birthday party, and so I wanted to start reading the books. And, you know, my mom just kind of eased into it. She never told me there was a book that I couldn't read. You know, she was never like, you're not allowed to read that. She would say, you know, let's wait on it. You can read this, you know, in a year or two when you're older. There were some romance books that she owned that were just a little too adult for me when I asked to read them, and I was probably like 10, you know. I was reading at a very young age, and I did discover, like, the Victorian romance novels way sooner than I should have. Scarred for life for several years. So by accidentally picking those up when my older sister brought some home, just thinking back how horrified I was when I read the first forbidden scene. Anyway, that is irrelevant, but, you know, I love that about my mom, that she never told me, you know, no, you're not allowed to read that. There was no forbidden books. You know, I know a lot of people have that homeschooling Catholic or even Christian homeschooling families that, you know, they're so sheltered and they're not allowed to do anything. That is not how I was brought up. She would just say, you know, let's wait a little while. And I think there's not enough of that. People don't seem to have that mindset with their children anymore. Like, you know, it doesn't have to be yes or no. It can be, you know, let's wait to expose them to some of this and teach them to think for themselves and then present them with things. And they can make, you know, an informed decision about it because we've taught them like that. You know, I could get off onto a whole nother rant here, but I'm going to stay regarding the Fallen Chronicles. So anyway, so there's a lot of mainstream fiction that now, you know, like Fallen Angel series and stuff like that. And the average person might pick it up thinking that it has to do with religion the way that my series does, and really it doesn't. I hated all these stories. I didn't hate them. It was hard for me to sink in and enjoy them because to me, if an angel has fallen from heaven, you know, angels are created by God, and there's the story that they fell with Lucifer and accepted him as their God, and I just don't really buy into the fact that angels cannot have an allegiance. You know, if they were created by God and the only way that they know is to follow God or follow someone and actually think, I don't know if there's any other raving Supernatural fans out there. I really like how they've handled everything on Supernatural and just, you know, saying that the angels are lost without a leader and they don't want to think for themselves. And I really think that's sort of how it is. You know, they're either following God or they're following Lucifer. So I didn't really like all those stories. I'm trying to think of some. There's the Fallen Saga and the one by Becca Fitzpatrick, the Hush series, excuse me, that are about fallen angels and, you know, Cassandra Clare loosely. I would say the fallen angels aspect of hers isn't so much into, you know, it's like the lore of how they came to be. It's not a huge thing about how they still are and functions into their everyday life as far as faith and all those kinds of things. So, you know, I just didn't really like that there could be, like, a question of allegiance or that they would fall in order to be with, you know, romantically with a human. I didn't like that. So that was what kind of started got me, I can't speak, look at me. that was what started to get me on this train of thought and wondering, you know, if the angels who fell and were with Lucifer, you know, they've been down there for eons, like, what if they did change their mind? You know, they changed their mind from following God, so what if they changed it while they were following Lucifer and realized, you know, this is wrong? What would happen then? And, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I realized that God's greatest, you know, characteristic that's seen over and over, aside from his, you know, wrath and kindness, is that it's his forgiveness. God always forgives. So why wouldn't he forgive these angels if they came to him and said, you know, we were wrong and we're sorry. Can we come back to heaven? You know, what would he do? And, you know, I kind of modeled it after going to confession in the Catholic Church. It's, you know, you confess your sins and you have a penance to do. You know, you have to atone for those sins. And so their atonement is being on earth. And that's kind of how the premise of it began, is just by me kind of following that train of thought and, you know, wondering what if. You know, I don't claim that it's true or think that there's angels out there or anything, but I like that it, you know, it's just a giant what if story. There are reviews on Guardian saying, you know, it's blasphemous and whatever, but I don't claim that this is ever true. It's fiction. I wanted to give basically, bumped my desk, excuse me. I wanted to give people who were like me, who were, you know, 11, 12 years old, that maybe their parents were having trouble finding books for them to read that were, you know, starting off that were clean. I don't think that people who are 11, 12, 13 years old need to be exposed to books about sex and stuff. You know, when you're that age, you should be wandering out in the woods building teepees and stuff like I was. You know, that's just not something that should be on your plate right then. There's plenty of time for that kind of stuff the rest of your life. So, you know, a book that was clean and could be recommended to them. And also, you know, it's hard to find books if you want ones that are about religious content and stuff like that. Ones that are good, and that are different too. You know, I want it to be different than just your average Christian kind of romance and stuff like that. And so, you know, hopefully I accomplished that. I don't know. I like to think that it turned out pretty well with those goals in mind. So that's kind of how that came into being. I should have made notes to follow where I was going with all of this. I think I was going to talk about writing. Oh, I remember. So I penned a few chapters of this. I was going to tell you how much it's changed from the original idea. So originally, I really wanted to put it in dual point of view, and Raphael had some, like, point of view chapters. I still have those. I've thought about kind of, like, bundling together a bunch of, like, scenes and stuff like that, but let me just tell you, those were written when I was 18, so they are, like, super melodramatic and not that great. The story changed a lot, and there was a lot of writing that I ultimately had to scrap. Starting out in the very first draft, Lila and Colton and Grace were actually living on the streets, and had no home, and Raphael caught her stealing food for them, and then, like, kind of figured out that, you know, that she was, like, homeless and was stealing it because she had to feed her siblings, not because she was, you know, some vagrant just stealing because she could. And so she kind of, like, she didn't want a connection with them, kind of for the same reasons that we see her shying away from people in what turned out to be the real story, is that she didn't want people to find out the truth about their parents and Colton and Grace and stuff like that. So we see her shying away because she's worried. She's like, who is this guy? How does he know this about me? He might report that I, you know, basically took my siblings and ran away from my foster homes and stuff like that. But then eventually Colton and Grace are taken back and put into foster care, and so she reaches out to Raphael for help. And then, nothing else about all that, made it in. Like, I had no idea where I was going after that. I think in one idea I had was that her dad was still around but didn't want them or sign them away or didn't know that they were there or something. I don't even know, guys. So as you can see, it changed pretty substantially, but that happens with a lot of my books. If you've read the Things We Can't Change stories, you may have seen some of the excerpts that in the original draft of that story in my head, Tony wasn't even in it. Like, it had nothing to do with abusive boyfriend. It was actually going to be a pregnancy rape story, and ultimately it just totally morphed from that. So it's pretty interesting when you're writing how much your idea can change from the first draft, or how it can stay exactly the same to how you originally envisioned it. You just never really know exactly what's going to happen, but, you know, things don't work out, or it seems easier than it's going to, you know, easier to do it a different way, or sometimes you start writing and trying to change it and realize that it needs to be changed back to your original idea. I don't know. You know, it's really whatever ends up working out best for the story. And for Guardian, I remember I started writing it and I had a whole bunch written, and, you know, a lot of it was just scenes that were in my head, you know, about Raphael telling Lila about different things and stuff like that. And about, let's see, 2 years after I graduated from high school, my parents moved to Florida and I went with them. And I just hadn't really been writing a whole lot since I graduated from high school. I was working a lot. I had a boyfriend for a little while after graduating, and then I was like, forget that. Boys are so stupid. No offense to any boys listening, but dating a boy is so stupid. Oh my gosh. Let's not even get into that. So that was pretty distracting from my writing, and then directly after we broke up, I went into peak season. I work in retail, and, you know, I really liked where I was working, the people I was working with at that job, and, you know, I had a big case of writer's block, pretty similar, to, I feel like, to what I'm going through right now. So I moved back to Florida, and part of my goal was that, with that, was, you know, not being distracted anymore. Like, starting over in a new city, I didn't have a whole lot of friends, obviously. It was just me and my family to start out with. So I was like, you know, I'm really going to try and put this extra time that I have into my writing. And so I was like, I chose Guardian to work on. So I had this collection of scenes. So I assembled it into the first half of the book, got my timeline straightened out and adjusted them and gave it to my mom. And I was like, I need you to read this. And basically tell me, you know, is it any good? Do you think I have something here? And my mom, oh my gosh, she is a saint. I adore my mom. She's been my biggest cheerleader. I had a series that I wrote while I was in high school, and she pushed me to try and self-publish it, and we wrote query letters and stuff, and ultimately I decided not to go ahead and self-publish right then while I was, like, a junior in high school, and I'm really glad I made that decision, just because going back and looking at those particular books right now, it was a fantasy series. You know, my writing has drastically improved since then. It's drastically improved since Guardian came out. You know, and that's a good sign. Your writing should improve with every book, or you're not doing it right, in my opinion. That's just me. So, you know, and she has just always, her biggest thing is, you know, if it's not good, I'm going to tell you. If it's good, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not going to kick your face while you're down or anything like that. But I'm going to be honest with you, because if this is what you really want to do, I mean, bless her. I love my mom. I don't know what I would do without her. I just remember vividly, like, one point after I graduated and I was just working and I was like, I don't even know if I want to go to college. And she just looked at me and she was like, if you just want to work, you know, your part-time job and try and get full-time there and become a manager and work in retail for the rest of your life and write, and that's all you want to do, that is fine. You do whatever you want. You know, and people need to be told that more often nowadays. You know, going to college just because everyone else is doing it isn't the solution, and, you know, if you have a dream, you should chase it. And I feel like I haven't been doing a very good job chasing this writing dream of mine in the past year or two, but, you know, whatevs. But my mom, you know, she's always been my biggest cheerleader. She's my editor, and she's the person that I go to. I actually recently had to send her the first half of Lightbringer, and it's kind of funny that I did it with Guardian, the first of the series, and now I'm doing it again with the last one during this block I've had again, and I gave her the first half of Lightbringer, and I was like, I need you to tell me if this is working out. You know, is this good? And she came back from the first half, and it was pretty much the same reaction she had when she was reading Guardian. She was like, this is fantastic. You know, she was like, finish it, and, you know, so I can read it for you and get on this. And so, you know, it's really nice hearing that from my mom, because, like, I, you know, she is always honest, and if she doesn't like a part of the story, she'll tell me. She won't say, you know, you need to change this because I don't like it. She'll say, I didn't like it, and this is why, and if you want to change it, you know, it's your work. I was pretty nervous, actually, when I wrote The Things We Can't Change and gave it to her. I wasn't sure what she'd think. It was a little bit darker than my normal stuff, you know. It's obviously a pretty big 180 from Guardian, the Fallen Chronicles series, and, you know, I actually remember when she read the first two books, and she came up to me and, like, sat down in my room while I was working and was like, Cass. And I was like, Mom? And she just was like, did something happen to you that you need to talk to me about? And I was like, Mom, I was not raped. This is all pure imagination. And she's just like, your imagination is pretty chilling then, because I was pretty convinced during all this that you had firsthand experience. But, you know, that's the creepy thing about writers. We're forced to be reckoned with. We're pretty scary sometimes, you know. But anyway, that's a very long-winded explanation of kind of how the Fallen Chronicles came to be. You know, I finished writing Guardian, and I decided, you know, to heck with it. I'm gonna self-publish this. I think this one's good. This is the first statement that I want to say with my writing, so I found a cover, started researching self-publishing stuff, and, you know, here we are 3 years later. I think it was the third-year anniversary this past June. Getting ready to release the last book in that series. It'll be, like, my 12th book that's coming out. So, it's pretty amazing how things can change. You know, I always want to be more successful. Never going to be quite where I want. But, you know, just keep going at it. And I think I would close by just saying, anyone that's listening to this, tell you the same thing that my mom told me. You know, if you want to write, just do it. And if that means, you know, not going through what's now the traditional path, with, you know, going to college and getting a 9-to-5 job, that's okay. You know, figure out how to support yourself and how to support your dream, and then go for it. At the end of the day, you know, you're the one that's responsible for your success and no one else. You know, and people won't be behind you. To this day, I have 6 siblings, okay? And probably only 2 of them have read any one of my books all the way through. So you kind of have to get your support elsewhere, and there's great online communities for that, especially with, you know, with writing, with anything. My best writing friend that I have, Allison, I met her online. She lived in California, and I lived in Florida at the time. We were literally across the U.S. from each other, but, you know, we supported each other. We still do. We have a collaboration book that's out right now. You guys should check it out. It's the Department of Paranormal Regulation. Episode 1 is Bloodlines, and the second one is coming out soon, and then, you know, it's a 10-part serial. But, you know, your biggest support, you know, maybe it's not your mom, maybe it's a friend, but, you know, you only need that one person to help pushing you, but at the end of the day, you're the one that has to push yourself. But, you know, I'm telling you, it's okay. Do it your way in the way that you need to, and, you know, something that you can be as proud of as I am of the Fallen Chronicles and the other books that I've written, you know, should come out of that. So I think I'm going to close this for now. I have to get going so that I can go to work. I have to get there a little bit early because there's a Disney Princess coloring poster that I want to buy. I mean, who the heck wouldn't want a Disney Princess coloring poster? I ask you. All right, guys. See you next time. Hope you enjoyed all this information on Lightbringer and that you're excited for it. Like I said, I hope to start sharing stuff soon. And as soon as I can finish the first draft and start getting the editing process going, I should have a better idea of when I will release it. And obviously, I will be...